Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I am Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Friday, December 15th, 2023. We're now halfway through the last month of the year, of course, and thanking you so much for watching the Eastman Financial Report, as well as WVW-TV and all the great programming that you see on this network. As you know, we are not a commercial network and we don't sell advertising, so we're not beholden to advertisers. But in order to pay the bills and keep our broadcasting alive and strong, we are very much indebted to our sponsors and very thankful that people continue to sponsor our programming. As you know, WVW-TV has been on the air since about 2006, we've had a long and successful track record of bringing great alternative viewpoints to the great marketplace of ideas. The materials you see on this network and the programming certainly challenge the dominant paradigm, as they used to say in the 60s. And that's our mission, is to be able to bring alternative viewpoints and facts through the smoke and mirrors of the mainstream media, so that people throughout the world can take a look at and see other alternative viewpoints that are very much relevant and very, very accurate. So we thank all of you for your kind viewership over the year, as well as your kind sponsorship. If you're interested in helping us out in this project, you can go to the WVWFoundation.com, and you can make a donation as a sponsor. And that really helps us out because, as you know, we don't have paywalls or subscriptions. You don't have to pay up front. You can basically tune in and watch great live programming all day long. And you can, if you're sitting up at 2:30 in the morning and nothing to do and you can't sleep, you can watch the Eastman Financial Report reruns at 2 in the morning. The point is that we have 24 hours a day. We're bringing information to that great marketplace of ideas. And we do that with the support of our sponsors. And of course, it's a lot of money to run a network. This doesn't happen cheap. This is an expensive proposition. So if you're in the generous gift-giving mood of the holiday season, we'd appreciate you maybe thinking about the WVW Foundation and helping out. We also have corporate sponsors that help as well. And of course, the corporate sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading. And Swiss America Trading is an American company. They're based in Arizona. And they basically sell precious metals. So if you are in the market for precious metals, or you're thinking about adding precious metals to your personal portfolio, or expanding your collection of precious metals, or even making a gift of precious metals, you should reach out to Swiss America at 1-800-519-6271 and tell them Dan Eastman from the Eastman Financial Report sent you, and they'll send you some free information. If you'd like to see what they have available, you can go to SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop their website. And of course, what you'll see are all sorts of gold and silver and platinum, valuable precious metal coins and bullion, and even coin collection quality or numismatic quality coins. They offer all three types of precious metals. So in this holiday gift giving season, if you're wondering what to get the nieces and nephews or aunts and uncles or cousins or whatever, and you're struggling at this late hour on December 15th to decide what can I do to give them a meaningful gift, think about the gift of precious metals. I mean, precious metals is been a gift for a very long time. If you read scripture, you'll see that King Solomon, when the Queen of Sheba showed up, he gave her lots and lots of gold and silver. And of course, when the Magi showed up to honor the baby Jesus, they brought gold as well. And it's a long tradition of giving precious metals during the holiday gifts giving season, or any season, frankly, because if it's precious, it's valuable. And if you give somebody a silver coin or a gold coin or a platinum coin, what you're saying is that you're giving them something that will last a very, very, very long time. We'll not say eternity, but these coins will be around long after all of us are in our glory. So the point is, these are great gifts to give. And if you go to the website, SwissAmerica.com, or give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. They're running a special, and I think you can still get, you can still cash in. So if you're like me and you wait till the very last minute to buy gifts, give them a call or go to their website today, because they have silver half dollars that are minted by the U.S. Mint. So you know the quantity of silver and the quality of silver is guaranteed. But these silver half dollars are being sold at $13.50, and that includes free shipping. So that's a real bargain, because shipping can sometimes add cost to your basis or the gift. But, you know, for $13.50 for the nieces and nephews, that's not a bad thing. They'll remember you as the prudent gift giver, relative, rather than, you know, the usual things that are used and enjoyed and then end up in the trash and then end up in the landfill. Nobody throws precious metals in the landfill by intentionally. So think about that. And if you're interested in that deal, $13.50 for the half dollar size silver coin, that's the one in the middle, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271 or SwissAmerica.com. Take advantage of it. You're going to buy up to 250. That's the max. And then the deal's over when they run out. So, and of course, this is December 15th. There are only 9 days left, so, or 10 days if you count Christmas Day. So you may want to pick up the phone or, you know, could hit the internet and get yourself some silver coins to hand out as gifts, precious gifts. Okay, thank you, Swiss America. We appreciate
it. So unless you take...
Okay, let's move into the news. Of course, it's the middle of December and markets are quiet, except they're not. The big blowback news is still the news radiating from the Federal Reserve Chair's comments. The Federal Open Market Committee, as you know, have been listening to me all week. They met Wednesday, and the Fed Chair made a statement that was directly contradictory to what he had said 2 weeks earlier. And, of course, the media picks up on it, the markets pick up on it, and the reverberations are still rattling around. And effectively what Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, said is that he could envision a time when interest rates will start to come down. 2 weeks earlier, he had said that we're holding interest rates steady and we may have to raise them because the economy is still pretty hot. 2 weeks later, well, numbers are coming in showing that the economy is still much more robust than anybody had expected. He's talking about cutting rates possibly in March. Well, the markets are going crazy because, you know, they're all trying to position and predict. If rates go down, it will be very much a stimulant. That's why the Federal Reserve adjusts rates up to slow down the economy and down to spike it up, push that punch bowl a little closer to the end of the table. Well, if that happens, the housing market in the United States will certainly pick up. It is poised for some rather dramatic upside because it's been suppressed for the better part of a year. There are a lot of people that want to buy homes. They don't want to pay 8% interest or 7% interest. And if the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates, the markets will adjust accordingly, mortgage rates will come down, people will list their homes, buyers will jump in and seize them and purchase, you know, put the offers in and buy them, and it's going to be somewhat of a frenzy. And of course, that's if you are on the political side of this equation, you want that to happen. You're going into an election year and you want the American economy going crazy, it's going to be great because that's how you get yourself reelected. On the other side, if you're running against that, you'll be pointing out that we've had 3 years of disastrous economy, 18% inflation over 3 years, and this is all kabuki. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But I think that one of the interesting tells when you watch this, if you're a Fed watcher, and I'm not a professional Fed watcher, I just happen to pay attention to what's going on in the financial news. But the Federal Reserve President Bank, let me say that again, the New York Federal Reserve Bank, the big one, the one with the permanent seat on the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC, that president, Mr. Williams, made a statement that was contradictory to Jerome Powell's statement of 2 days ago. He basically came out and said something to the effect that nobody's really talking about interest rates. Well, now the markets were all rattled because their interest rates are going down. All of a sudden, when the most powerful president of the, remember, there are 12 Federal Reserve banks scattered about the United States for regionalization, but the New York Federal Reserve Bank is the big one. Okay, that's the most powerful. They have the permanent seat. And when the president of that bank says, not so fast, then it not only disrupts the markets, it creates uncertainty, and uncertainty is never rewarded. But it signals to people like me and professional Fed watchers that there is still a lot of disconcernment, discontent, and perhaps disagreement amongst the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee members. You have the 7 appointed governors, which are appointed by the president. You have the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Mr. Williams, and then you have 5 of the other presidents around. And we've heard from Dallas, we've heard from Boston, we've heard from Atlanta. And basically, these are the powerful people to make decisions. So when you've got the most powerful of the Federal Reserve branches, New York, saying, we haven't really talked about that. And you get the chair of the Federal Reserve System saying, we're considering it. There's a contradiction that's going to create additional havoc as we roll into the holiday week. So, but it's fine. Nothing's really going to happen. And the good news is, this is the good news, is that Congress has already, thankfully, kicked the can down the road past Thanksgiving, past Christmas. So the government will not be closing again until January. So we won't have to listen to this, you know, when you're enjoying your eggnog and your Christmas delights or your Hanukkah delights or your celebrations. You won't be burdened with the heavy heart of knowing that the federal government's going to shut down on Christmas Eve or whatever. So that's the good news. So there's always a silver lining in the news. And, you know, that's in order to celebrate the silver linings, I think you should call Swiss America and order yourself a silver half dollar and tape it to your refrigerator, and you can look at it every time you walk by, and there's always a silver lining. So let's talk about some of the other news here. The December Purchasing Manager Index came out, and of course, it is much more consistent with the other data that we've been looking at. Manufacturing is down and services is slightly up. So what it tells you is that the purchase managers index is the people who run factories, and they will look at their projections and costs, their supply chain and the cost of inputs, and they have an index, and people watch this purchasing managers index. Excuse me, because what it does is it shows you whether the economy is looking like it's expanding or contracting. And what this is telling us is it's flat. It's not expanding. According to this metric, it's not contracting, it's just flat, although manufacturing itself is down, but services are up. So what it's telling you is that when you look at these indexes and then you put them all in perspective, if you're Jerome Powell or you're Mr. Williams from the Federal Reserve in New York, whom I respect because he's obviously, you don't get to be the Federal Reserve president of New York without knowing it. This guy's smart. So when you see these big, powerful people going back and forth, and you see numbers that are like this, which are going back and forth, it's really an indicator that monetary policy, it's very possible, could be influenced by the political crazy that will befall us on January 1st, maybe January 2nd. I think most of us are taking January 1st off, so we'll tune back in January 2nd for the year 2024, and it should be quite a riot. But anyway, it's kind of an interesting time. Another one of these indicators that I found just absolutely fascinating this morning is the U.S. Treasury puts out the report. This is Secretary Janet Yellen, who used to be a Fed chair back in the day, and now she's the Secretary of the Treasury, and she's smart. I mean, Janet Yellen, she knows all this. She not only knows how the sausage is made, she knows how to turn the sausage machine on. But the point is, the Treasury report says, and this is mind-numbing, that wages grew faster than inflation. So when you take the rate of inflation and the rate of wage growth in the United States, they calculate out this idea that everybody got $1,000 more wages than inflation. I think, well, that's amazing. Well, if you were the Secretary of the Treasury and your boss is up for re-election next November and you want to make everything look real cool, maybe you come out with reports like that. But I would, you know, anybody who has $1,000 bump in their income, where they have more income than inflation last year, with that windfall, you may want to call the WVW Foundation and make a donation, because you've been blessed. You have $1,000 in your pocket that you didn't even know you had. So that's the point of this report. And what you're starting to see is all sorts of economic good news coming up that's really being driven by a political situation, and all from a government that's $33, $34, $35 trillion in debt. So when you see these reports, and this is the whole purpose of my show, is critical thinking. You work your way through all of this. If you've got an extra $1,000, good for you. And you're blessed, and you should bless others. It's good. I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money, but that's it. Okay, moving right along. I did notice that California is running a deficit of $68 billion. And that means the California taxes there's a deficit between what they tax and spend. And keep in mind, the Constitution of the United States requires that states operate under a balanced budget. Okay, that's an important thing to remember. Your municipal government is a balanced budget. They pass a budget bill and then they spend it. And there's a little reserve maybe and sometimes there's an emergency, a big snowstorm or something. But at the end of the day, municipal government tax and spend, you're even, you break even. Same thing with your county. county will tax to do, you know, they'll provide a jailhouse and a sheriff and, you know, services. And then the idea is they tax and they spend it. And then there's maybe a little left over. Maybe there's a little deficit. They got to dig into their little reserve fund. But the idea is tax and spend balance. Same thing with your state. Every other state except California, Illinois, will tax and spend and break even. Some states run surpluses. Well, in California, you've got $68 billion in deficit and only $30 billion in revenue in reserves. So I guess that's somewhat good. It's only $38 billion short. But this becomes a real problem. I say, what do I care? I live in Wisconsin. What do I care what happens in California? Well, that was easy to say up until the 2008 period when Illinois and California had massive, massive pension, public pension shortfalls. They were massive. It was unpayable, backable. Okay, you could not tax the citizens of Illinois and California enough to pay back the money into these pensions so that the government, state government workers could go live in Florida and not pay their income taxes. Yeah, we know. And so the point is, there was legislation that swept that away and paid it all. And that came out of the federal taxpayers' money, and it was used to balance those systems out because you can't have pension funds crashing. You know, I mean, oh, what could happen? Well, all right, that happened, and that was a real political problem. Well, now we're looking at a headline saying that this is happening again. The California can just spend itself into oblivion, not collect enough taxes, and what do? They go to the federal government. And, you know, this is probably what's going to happen. I'm not saying it is happening, but pay very close attention to this story because here they come, hat in hand. Oh my gosh, you got to bail us out. That really is not the way the United States Constitution works. The states are responsible for taxing and spending, taxing their citizens and spending and doing it within a balanced budget because there's not a tax reappropriation within the federal Constitution. And thank goodness there isn't because the federal government would be bailing out every last state and would take any discipline whatsoever off of the states, shift it to the federal government and the federal taxes. Starting to sound like the Roman Empire, isn't it? Yeah, strange. It would be used to basically cover the damage the states would be spending like crazy. States have to be held responsible for their spending. And, you know, as a Wisconsin taxpayer, I don't really relish the idea of funding a California utopia. And that it's something we need to watch because when these stories break, what this does is it lays the groundwork for future actions in Congress. And at some point, you'll see. And it happened. Nobody thought it would ever happen with the pensions. It was just swept through. The only way to make that nightmare solvent was federal taxation and federal funds. It was basically, you know, when they're borrowing $33 trillion, you can't really argue that's federal taxation. At this point, it's federal printing. And that's not an excuse to continue the process because at some point, and we're getting very close to that point, there will be a day of reckoning at the federal debt level. And I think, you know, God forbid when that happens because the little guy is going to be the roadkill on the way to the next iteration. So anyway, I wanted to point that story out. Also, another sad tale of this holiday week is cargo carriers. You measure cargo carriers are the great big boats that go from China to Long Beach and, you know, California, and they bring all the stuff that's made in China to the United States, California, where it's distributed across the continent. And it was an interesting statistic that there are 178 of these big boats that are flagged under the United States of America. 178 of them. Okay. There are 7,362 of these big boats that are flagged under the People's Republic of China. 178, 7,362. What that tells you is that, well, it tells you a lot of things, but the Chinese have a very, very strong vested interest in shipping stuff from their mega factory, their national factory, across the globe. And the United States, with its flag ships, now these ships go from port to port to port. It doesn't matter where they are. You know, take a load here, over there. But at the end of the day, when you look at America as a maritime power, we started out as a maritime country, a colonial maritime country, and you can see where we are with respect into, you know, transporting the stuff that gets shipped, whether it's liquefied natural gas or whether it's coal or whether it's iron ore or containers full of stuff. Doesn't really matter, but I thought that was a very interesting statistic when you think about, you know, where the U.S. fits into global shipping. And of course, we watch that with the shipping container ships. And we know that that business is struggling right now. And I also, it's a bit of a footnote that there's these Maersk container ships that are in the Red Sea, which is kind of a hot spot of late, are basically at risk. So there's a very complicated process. So how do you make stuff globally and ship stuff globally? What are the mechanics? And this is part of that structure. So it's another interesting number. We do know that holiday travel is predicted to be through the roof for Christmas season, the holiday season, and was very big on Thanksgiving of this year. So I guess that suggests that while consumers may be tapped, they certainly are also in a position where they are traveling. And maybe the holiday season is becoming more experiential rather than material with respect to gift giving. And that's a thing. I mean, more and more people travel, go somewhere, at least up here, they go somewhere warm for the holidays. I don't know, do you think people in the South, Florida area, they come to Wisconsin for a snowy Christmas and then they go back? I don't know, it'd be interesting to know that. I guess we could track that down. But the point is, we're still seeing major travel through the holidays, and that's, you know, spending. It costs a lot of money to buy a plane ticket and fly somewhere, rent a car, stay in a hotel, or just, you know, whatever. And of course, eat, you know, dining out, all of that. At the same time, we look at consumer data for the holiday season, and I noticed that there's a metric out that says toy sales are plunging. Oof, boy, that's really a problem, because, you know, what was those old Santa Claus going to do up at the North Pole? You know, people aren't buying toys. It's not good. But the reality is that what they're saying is that this supports the idea that Christmas or the holiday season, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, all the holidays are becoming more experiential. And I think that's kind of an interesting shift from my perspective, as a Christian perspective, is that people have complained for a very long time that Christmas is too materialistic. And shifting back to an experiential experience for the holidays, especially if it includes a religious component, might be an interesting thing. I certainly saw people in our community, Hanukkah celebrated, it's going, and it's been very, very popular this year. We have a lot of people are much more in tune, I think, with their cultural celebrations, given the situation in the Middle East. It's a good thing to see that people return to their roots. So, but anyway, poor toy manufacturers are struggling, and I don't know what Mr. and Mrs. Claus are going to be doing, but hopefully Rudolph will have something to haul, poor thing. Okay, another thing I want to talk about is that there was a story briefly that more and more retail merchants are gathering data about their customers. And if you're like me, you have this, you know, these little cards, and when you go to the grocery store or this store or that store, everybody's got a program that if you use your membership card, or maybe it's not a membership card, a loyalty card, whatever, you rack up points, and then I guess they give you coupons or something happens, something of benefit happens. But the negative story behind that, and something I want to explore probably in January of the next year, is the data that's being collected about you when you go and shop at a store, what you're buying. You know, if you go into the grocery store and you buy cigarettes and alcohol, and you know, they rack that up, and it's all part of your personal profile. Or you go to the hardware store, and if you buy plumbing, well, then they know that your pipes are leaking. And the point is, they're starting to build profiles of each of us as consumers that is driven by this digital collection of data. And that's, you know, well, from the superficial perspective, it is, you really don't care if a hardware store knows that I bought a screwdriver last week. But when you start to accumulate data points from gas stations, grocery stores, hardware stores, big box stores, small box stores, online purchasing, and you start to build a profile of each of us as a consumer, where your zone is and what your proclivities for expenditure are. Then, of course, if you're a marketing company, this is great. You know, if you know that I buy a lot of screwdrivers, you will certainly send me ads to buy more screwdrivers. But when you think about that from a larger perspective, when you talk about the digitalization of money and the digitalization of data and digitalization of health data and digitalization of funding and banking accounts, and stock brokerage accounts, there is emerging a data profile of each of us as human beings that is vast and deep at this point. I mean, it's kind of too late to put the genie back in the bottle. But at the end of the day, it's an interesting story that I think you're going to hear more about again in 2024, because people are starting to realize that while technology is wonderful, I mean, it's really changed lives for the better over, well, since 1984, I guess, when Apple rolled out its famous Super Bowl commercial and before that. You know, but the technology has a cost. I mean, there's always for the betterment of humanity, but it's also the idea that the individual loses when your privacy is diminished, your individualism is compressed, and that becomes a political problem and a problem with rights. As an attorney, I know that our constitutional rights are sacred, and we as attorneys take that very seriously, that people have very strong constitutional rights, because it's what defines us as a nation and as a people. And when technology starts to blur those rights, it becomes a really difficult situation. Because when you think about a constitution that was drafted with quill pens on parchment in the 1780s, and you look at how we communicate today, then the fundamental principles of freedom are bedrock. They go back to ancient Greece and earlier. But the ability to use technology for good and the ability to use technology for bad is becoming more and more of a thing. And that's what I was talking about yesterday when I was finishing. I guess this is what I do at the end of the show, is talk about illusions. I started out talking about magicians and illusions. And I said, I have a friend who's doing some deep research into this, which is not surprising, because my career as a securities attorney, the first thing you learn as a securities attorney is you learn about the crash of 1929, the Wall Street crash. And you learn about the abuses on Wall Street before 1929. And 1929 was the bell that rang, that opened the eyes to realize that leveraged speculation was very dangerous. And as a result of that, and it took Congress from 1929 to 1933, that's 4 years, to basically adopt the Securities Act of 1933. And a famous person drafted the majority of that act. It was Mr. Milton Friedman, who became a professor of economics at the Chicago School of Economics. But the point is, in 1933, the Congress decided that illusions were not a good thing when it came to investing money. And the 33 Act is the disclosure of all material facts, the failure to disclose a fact or the disclosure of misinformation. You can either a sin of omission or commission, you can't hide the truth and you can't lie. And that was basically how Wall Street, the congressional mechanism to regulate Wall Street. So when people started to sell securities in those days, they had to, and still today, they have to do a prospectus. If they register the security with the Securities Exchange Commission, it's a registered security. And in order to get approval, you have to do a prospectus, which is a document that tells the truth, all material facts. It doesn't make misstatements of material fact. And it tells the truth, and it doesn't hide stuff. So when you buy a stock today or a bond, and you read the prospectus, which is not easy to read, you will have what is as close to the truth as can be done by good-hearted people. I mean, people take, care as a young associate. You want to be real careful drafting those things. But at the end of the day, that's the truth, and that's how the securities markets work. And I want to talk a little bit about that in future lectures as well, but it's the ability to not create illusions to trick people into giving you their money. And that's a whole big reason why that securities regulation exists. Anyway, I'm out of time for today. Thank you so much for listening. Please consider supporting WVW Foundation. Please consider doing business with our corporate sponsors. Thank you so much for watching the Eastman Financial Report, and you have a great afternoon. I'll talk to you Monday. Bye.